I'm Brett.
And I'm Alice.
And we are the Prosecutors. Today on The Prosecutors. In December 2020, a 21-year-old left his college, headed home for the Christmas holidays. But then, in 66 minutes, he seemingly vanished from the face of the earth. Where is Jason Landry? Everybody, and welcome to this episode of The Prosecutors. I'm Brett, and I'm joined, as always, by my Bonzer Sheila co-host, Alice.
That was a bombing word. What language is that? That was awesome.
Well, that's just Australian. It's still English.
Oh, but... I love it. Our Aussie fans are the best. What? That was
from
a
Sharon.
Great word.
Yeah. Thank you, Sharon. Trying to, you know, be more cosmopolitan in my superlatives. And Alice is a Bonzer Sheila, I think. Bonzer Sheila sounds like a good thing to be. So I'm going to go with it's a compliment. And it sounds like Alice to me, even though her name's Alice, not Sheila. She's a Bonzer Alice. And Alice is a popular name in Australia.
Is it?
Know?
Is it actually?
I think so. I don't know.
Do you know how my parents came up with Alice? They thought I was a boy, and so they only had boy names picked out, and then they were like, it's a girl, and they're like, you can't leave the hospital without naming your child, and they're like, we have not given any thought to this, and we don't really care. And so there was, like, an article about Alice in Wonderland, like Lewis Carroll's Alice in Wonderland. Mm-hmm. They're like, Alice is a name, let's go with that. So,
well, there you go.
That's how I was named.
And we're through the looking glass now, Alice. A lot of thought. Alice. A lot of thought going into your name. Well, I was named after a TV character. So,
which one?
Brett Maverick, the television show Maverick, and later the movie Maverick starring Mel Gibson.
Should we just call you Maverick instead?
I mean, I don't know, I guess. I think when most people hear Maverick now, they think of Top Gun.
That's fair.
But I always liked the show. It was a good show. It had James Garner in it. James Garner was awesome. Played the dad in the movie. I guess that was kind of a surprise at the end, so sorry. Spoiler alert. That movie's only 30 years old. So, anyway, it's a good one. Well, we have now drifted far off topic here at the beginning of the show. And I got to tell you guys, we have a crazy show today, one that is really new. I mean, we're talking less than a year old in this. It's a very fresh case. It's a case where you can make a difference. And it's a case you probably hadn't heard of. But if you have, you know how crazy this one is. Reminds me a lot, Alice, of Maura Murray in a lot of ways. Very sort of similar in that you have someone who is involved in a car accident who should be there or at least nearby, and yet there's no sign of them.
That's a great analogy. And, I mean, this is truly like something out of a movie. And every time I think, oh, there's just a boring reason for what happened to Jason, I'm brought back to some key facts that are just going to boggle all of your minds.
And I think, you know, one of the craziest things about this case is, once again, this happened in 2020. You know, Maura Murray was at least 2004, and the sort of constant, never-ending tracking of every movement you ever make had not yet taken hold. You know, I think Facebook came out the same month as Maura Murray disappeared, which is crazy to think about. But now, it's hard to believe you could go anywhere and someone not know exactly where you are. And yet, we're going to see in this case how technology breaks down and you still have this insane mystery. And one, like I said, that we can bring resolution to this family who wants to know where their son and brother is. Well, let's give you the story. So Jason Landry, he's a guy whose story probably rings familiar to a lot of you. He's the youngest son of three children. His father's a Presbyterian preacher, reformed lawyer and Presbyterian preacher. And Jason was known as just a good, respectful kid, but one who maybe wanted to break out of the confines of his life. So, you know, he didn't follow the traditional path, might be the best way to say it. You know, he didn't go to business school or whatever. He sort of struck out on his own when it came to education and life. He was an artist, he was a gamer, he was a musician. And because of that, and a lot of you have experienced this as well, probably, the sort of one-size-fits-all path wasn't really for him, and it took him a while to find that path that he should be on. But by the time he was in his early 20s, things were coming together for him. He realized that music really was his passion, and that was something he wanted to be involved in, and he had applied to the prestigious Sound Recording Technology program at Texas State University. And he was actually at the university in his first semester. It was one of those things where he's in school, but he's applying for this program that's part of school. And the expectation was that he would become a part of this eventually. He was going to be accepted. And everything was pointing in that direction. Not that college had been everything that he had hoped it would be. Like so many of us, COVID had completely disrupted his life, and it had caused the campus to lock down, and Jason himself, like once again, so many of us. I mean, so one thing about Jason that I think you're gonna come back to again and again, and I came back to again and again, is how relatable he is and how his story just isn't all that unusual, and you can totally see yourself in his shoes. Every now and then, he would be in contact with somebody who would get COVID, and so he would be stuck in quarantine for days on end on multiple occasions. His classes were either virtual or they were of the here's the syllabus, good luck variety. Still, it must have been with a sense of accomplishment and joy that on December 13th, 2020, he left his college, heading home to his parents' house for Christmas break. But as December 13th turned into December 14th, something went terribly wrong. Jason's car was found wrecked on a lonely, abandoned road 60 miles to the east of San Antonio, Texas. What happened to him remains a mystery.
Brett, before we move on, I think it's no surprise to our listeners that I am a really big scaredy cat. I am always scared that someone's watching my house or about to break in. Well, if you've ever wanted to make your home feel safer, there is no better time than now, because I am so excited about our sponsor, Simply Safe. Our friends at Simply Safe are giving the Prosecutor's Podcast listeners early access to all their Black Friday deals, 50% off their award-winning home security. We love Simply Safe because it has everything you need to make your home safe: indoor and outdoor cameras, comprehensive sensors, all monitored around the clock by trained professionals who send help the instant you need it.
And Alice, this is something we understand: security, wanting your family to be safe, wanting to keep your home safe. And there's no better way to do it then Simply Safe. Simply Safe was named Best Home Security System of 2021 by U.S. News and World Report. And you can easily customize a system for your home online in minutes and even get free custom recommendations from Simply Safe. These are Simply Safe's biggest discounts of the year. Now is the time to get that complete home security system you want, starting at just over $100. And there are no long-term contracts or commitments. It's really easy to start feeling a bit more peace of mind with Simply Safe.
So take advantage of Simply Safe's early Black Friday deals and get 50% off your new home security system by visiting simplysafe.com/TP. Again, that's simplysafe.com/TP for 50% off your entire system. Yeah, Brett, you know, it's so strange to hear about this story because it's really set in present day. You know, this is the reality we've all been living with. Quite literally, you and I are recording in our separate locations because the world is, you know, we're still separated because of COVID. And regularly, we are still sent back into quarantine whenever someone is, there's an exposure risk. And so reading this and kind of talking about this now really hits home, because I can only imagine those who are Jason's age, those who are experiencing college and, you know, kind of early adulthood in the midst of COVID. And it hasn't just been a couple months. It's been years at this point, more than a year, almost 2 years, how formative it can be and how lonely it is when we already live in an age where that generation has grown up on social media and the loneliness that can come with social media, right? This has been documented not just by, you know, it's not just us saying that, it's been pretty well documented by psychologists and psychology journals about how social media itself makes us actually feel lonelier. And now add in the element of quite literally you are lonely because you are not really allowed to be around people for an extended period of time due to the pandemic.
And we were able to get some insight into Jason. Jason's dad was kind enough to talk to us on the phone for about an hour about this case and about his son. And one of the things he talked about was that, just how difficult it was for him. He's sort of an outgoing, gregarious guy. He's a people person. And yet he is stuck in this situation where he's finally figured out what he wants to do. And then he gets to college and all of a sudden, you know, he's stuck in his dorm room. And I can't imagine how difficult it must have been for a lot of you guys. I know a lot of the people who listen to this show are in college or in law school. And I'm just sorry. I'm sorry that that happened to you, because I can't imagine how difficult that must have been. And it's something we're going to talk about more as we continue with this story.
Absolutely. But let's dive into the timeline so you can see just how quickly Jason's story took a turn for the strange. On December 13th at 10:55 p.m., Jason leaves Texas State University in San Marcos, Texas, which is a relatively small college town, heading home to his parents' house, which was located in a town called Missouri City, Texas. It's kind of just southwest of Houston, a suburb of Houston, Texas, obviously one of the Houston being one of the largest cities in the United States. But the road between San Marcos and Missouri City is relatively quiet. A lot of it is highways, but in order to get on the highway, you have to go through some small towns. So let me stop here real quick. I did note that I thought it was a little bit strange that Jason was leaving so late at night, almost 11 p.m. Now, he is in college. I know I've definitely driven late at night before, especially in college. But you should note that from San Marcos to Missouri City is about a 2.5, almost 3-hour drive. So it's not a short one. He's planning to get in really in the middle of the night. Now, Jason's dad said that this probably wasn't that strange for him. He was a college student. I think he'd planned to leave earlier that day, but for whatever reason, maybe he got caught up packing, saying goodbye to friends, what have you. He didn't leave until late night. What about you, Brett? Did you ever kind of leave later knowing you'd be driving in the middle of the night?
Yeah, this happened to me all the time when I was in college. I would say, I mean, I always enjoyed going home and seeing my parents, but I also liked college, right? And so I didn't want to leave any earlier than I had to leave. And so I lived about an hour and a half away, so not 3 hours. I mean, 3 hours is a long way to leave at 11 o'clock. I'll give you that. But having said that, I would often leave around this time, 11 o'clock, maybe even later, to make that drive. And it just wasn't a big deal. It's hard to believe the way I feel now that, you know, when I was in college, it was a regular thing to stay up till 3 or 4 in the morning. I mean, it just wasn't a big deal, right? And so to me, this doesn't necessarily strike me as strange. It's one of the first things that jumps out to you. And I'm sure it's jumped out to everybody who's listening that he would leave so late. I mean, it's a really late departure time. And it feeds into what we're going to talk about, because there is a lot of mystery in this case. And there's a lot of mystery about what exactly he was doing. So if, for instance, you think he was meeting someone where he ended up, then maybe the late departure isn't so much he just didn't get around to it, but he couldn't meet this person until a certain time. And so that's why he left when he did. But I will say, just from my experience personally, leaving this late is not that big a deal. I remember one time I had a 12-hour drive ahead of me, and I left at like 2 o'clock in the afternoon, which 2 o'clock in the afternoon is not that late to leave, except when you're going to be driving for 12 hours. So I've certainly done the kind of things he's done.
I will note, though, Brett, the majority of your 12-hour trip would have been in daylight, whereas this is all in the middle of the night. And again, being a college student, I remember I wasn't scared of being at gas stations late at night by myself. I was really kind of too bold, I think. Now I'm terrified to, in fact, right before we started recording, this is, you know, post-bedtime, so it's not that late because it's toddler bedtime, but I kind of get scared pulling the trash can to the curb by myself in the dark, and it's like 8 o'clock. Because I'm like, what if someone like comes out, careens around the corner and throws me into the back of their unmarked van, and then my kids are stuck in the house by themselves, you know? So I think I've become more cautious with age, but at this age, you know, it's perfectly fine. And I think the key here is that Jason's dad didn't find it strange. Now, Jason's dad did say that Jason, of all his children, remember, he's the baby of the family, was kind of the worst at telling his parents when his comings and goings, even though they requested, you know, let us know when you get there. And he'd kind of forget. I'm guilty of this. I tell my husband all the time, I'll tell him when I reach my destination, and I hardly ever do. We probably all do this. And so Jason's dad did not think it was A, strange that he didn't know Jason was planning to leave at this hour or even this day, I think. And that second, that Jason would leave so late. One thing that was an interesting insight from Jason's dad was that Jason had actually finished his exams by this time, and he was just hanging out on campus. I think he had tried to see a friend who was going to pass through town and realized that that friend wouldn't come until later. So he went ahead and changed his plans to come home. So it's possible he, you know, nothing, hours didn't mean anything to him at this time, maybe, because he didn't have any deadlines, any papers due, any exams. So 11 o'clock p.m. may as well have been 11 a.m. when you're a college student.
And I think that's a really good point you make, Alice, about the fact that it's not even clear that he knew what day he was going to leave on, because that's the sort of thing that maybe did lead to him taking some sudden action. For all we know, he did learn that night that his friend wasn't going to come through, and he thought, well, this is an opportunity for me to go home for a little bit. His plan was to go home and then actually come back to college and hang out with this buddy of his. So he was only going home for a couple days, even though it was close to Christmas. Then he was going to go back, hang out with his friend, and then come back home. Once again, the kind of thing you do when you're 22 years old, you make the 3-hour drive, don't even think about it. You leave in the middle of the night, and then you get home. But to me, I think it is a very normal thing that he did, and it's a sort of unremarkable thing for your average college student. And the only reason that we're really probably even talking about it is because he disappeared. But having said that, once again, it might be relevant, and so keep it in the back of your mind as we discuss some of the other unusual aspects of this case.
Also, again, Jason being so relatable, like many of us, he plugged into his Waze to map the route from San Marcos to his home. And this is actually not that unusual because he had only really driven this route about 2 times before. And all indications from that Waze, now, mind you, if you are plugging something into Waze, then you have a GPS tracking you. So when he's driving, there is a GPS tracker blinking, kind of, so to speak, as to where he is. There is a satellite map of where he's going. And all these indications are that he's headed in the general direction of home. He's traveling down Highway 80 on his way to the big highway, I-10. At 11:24 p.m., Jason reaches Luling, Texas. Now, this is the last town before the I-10 ramp. It's a small little town, kind of just the only reason you go through it at this point is to get onto the major highway. At this point, Jason does something kind of strange. He turns off his Waze and opens his Snapchat. I only say this is strange because I believe your maps can actually keep going as you work on other apps. So like when I'm using my GPS maps, even though I shouldn't, but if I'm in the car and not driving, I open up Facebook, I open up Instagram, what have you, and the maps are kind of still in the background. But he turns off his Waze in order to open his Snapchat. We learn from his father that this is a Snapchat he receives from an ex-girlfriend of his who they are on good terms. They, I think, were high school sweethearts, and they were still friends, and this was just kind of a normal, hey, friend, thinking of you. Here's a picture of us from the past. Now, Jason travels down Highway 80, which turns into East Austin Street, and he follows that to Spruce Avenue, which eventually becomes Salt Flat Road. From that point forward, his phone provides no evidence of where he went or what happened to him.
And this is sort of the beginning of the mystery. I mean, up to this point, like Alice said, there's every reason to believe we should be able to track his every movement. He's on ways, he's headed home, everything's normal. And then there's this moment where he's not on ways anymore. And why that is, we're going to talk about some possible theories, but it seems strange. Like Alice said, there's no reason to turn off ways. It's not like, you know, it's not like you can only run one app at a time on your phone. So even if you wanted to check your Snapchat while you're sitting at the red light or whatnot, you don't have to turn off your ways. And moreover, as Alice said, this is only maybe the third time he's made this drive, and he's never made it before at night. So you would think he would want that. I mean, as far as I know, I started driving before we had all these apps, so I can still kind of find my way around, but I've been doing it long enough. And those of you who started driving after we had all these things, I don't know where I am ever, right? Like, I am using the app to take me wherever I'm going. And if for some reason I lose service or whatnot, I just have no idea where I am. And it surprises me, I guess, that this 22-year-old, kind of still in the middle of nowhere, I mean, he's very close to being on the interstate, but kind of still in the middle of nowhere, is turning off his ways and not turning it back on.
And one thing to note is I get, once you get on I-10, it's a straight shot. He's on I-10 for like 2 hours. And I-10 is just a massive highway with, I don't know, it's like an 8-lane highway, and you just go on it until home. It's pretty easy. If you know your exit, you just stay on it for 2 straight hours. I often, if I'm driving a long distance, once I get on the road I know I will be on for the rest of the way, I may turn off my maps, but I don't usually turn it off until I get on that road. So it might be that he thought he was right at the ramp and he decided to turn it off, or it may have been an accident. Maybe he accidentally turned off Waze as he went to go switch to Snapchat. But for whatever reason, his Waze was turned off, which means that we no longer have the phone evidence tracking of where he goes. This is very close to midnight, so the next morning, but it's really just an hour later, on December 14th at 12:30 in the morning, Jason's car is discovered just outside of Luling, Texas, still on Salt Flat Road, and there is no sign of him. But his belongings are found, and this we'll discuss later because this is very strange, what is found. At 2 a.m., police call Jason's parents to let him know they've found his wrecked car, but not him. His car is discovered by an off-duty fireman.
Firefighter.
An off-duty firefighter who's kind of just driving, I think, home. He's not really on duty. He's just on his way home and notices this car kind of on a ditch. It's not all the way down in the ditch, but kind of like a divot where water can run off of. And he notices that the car is still on and the door is kind of cracked ajar. And of course, you know, I think many people may do this, but especially an off-duty firefighter, he stops to see if the person needs any help, but really can't find anyone. And this is the middle of nowhere. You know, he could get to town eventually. It's not that far away, but it's also kind of a rural part of Texas.
And obviously it's, you know, at this point it's 12:30 in the morning when this happens. So it's pretty late, pretty dark. This is winter. Remember, we're in December now, so it's been dark for a while. Those of you who know, this daylight savings time, I hate it. I hate it when it gets dark.
Daylight savings is probably the worst thing for parents.
Oh, it's the worst thing for humanity. I mean, the fact that it is still dark before you get to leave work is terrible. You know what I mean? Like, it's possible to get to work, and I've done this before, get to work before the sun comes up, and you leave after the sun goes down, and it just feels like there wasn't a day. Anyway, horrendous. That's an aside. But by this time, in the middle of nowhere in Texas, it's dark. So, very strange situation. The wreck itself, like Alice said, it's pretty clearly a single car accident. Investigators believe that Jason, he was driving down this gravel road, and at some point, he just kind of spun out of control and lost control. And then as his car is sort of spinning out of control, he rear ends a tree. Now, police found no real blood in the vehicle. We'll talk about some blood in a second, but no blood in the vehicle that would indicate sort of a major injury, not that kind of blood. There's no sign of any other person having been there. Some of the windows in the back had been smashed out by the tree that the car had hit. The wreck was very survivable. The airbags did not deploy. Now, the car could not drive anymore, so the car was wrecked. It was stuck there, but it didn't seem to be the kind of wreck that was going to kill someone. And this wreck occurred about 5 miles down Salt Flat Road from Luling, where we're going to talk about this in a second, where Jason would have turned, sort of leaving Luling down Salt Flat Road. This was about 5 miles down that road, and it is a barren, gravel, unpaved road. I mean, this is not, you're not going to be going 80 miles an hour down this road, not if you want to survive.
Now, one thing about the airbags not deploying, we mentioned in Maura Murray how her airbags hadn't deployed either, and airbags did deploy, and we thought that must have been because it was such a big crash. We were told afterwards by people who know a lot more about airbags that you could be in a pretty bad crash and the airbags still not deploy. It's actually based on where you're hit and the sensors on the car. So before I found out all that information about airbags, I may have thought, oh, if the airbags didn't deploy for Jason, it must not have been a very bad wreck. But it's not. It may not tell us very much, except that his car did not have the sensors where it would have deployed the airbags. But I think it is a note that there's no blood in the car, and so he shouldn't be that hurt, seemingly. Now, we've talked a lot about Jason's phone. What happened to that phone? Well, it was found between the driver's seat and the console. It was on and had a signal. But Jason had not used it since he was in Luling proper. This, to me, is very strange. First of all, the fact that it's between the driver's seat and console tells me that it probably fell during the crash, maybe before or after. Usually I don't store my phone, you know, on the ground, but it falls there sometimes when I'm driving or I do a quick stop on the highway because, you know, there's like traffic in front of me. My phone may slip between, or maybe I could envision that he was looking at Snapchat, the phone, he was trying to type something like you shouldn't if you're driving, and it slips out of his hand and he's trying to grab for it when he then loses control. But whatever the reason, the phone is on the ground, and I think the most interesting thing to note is that the phone did have a signal. He was not stuck in the middle of nowhere without cell phone coverage. And when you get in a crash, most of us, probably the first thing we would do is to reach for our phones to either call 911 or call a loved one to pick us up, especially if our car is undrivable and you're in the middle of nowhere.
I mean, this is the big red flag for me. This is the start of this mystery. I mean, so far you just have somebody getting a wreck on a gravel road and okay, whatever. But then you have this phone, and we all know the phone is our lifeline, particularly if you're 22 years old, you don't go anywhere without your phone. He obviously was using his phone. His phone was still working. It still had battery. He gets in a car wreck, and yet you would think the one thing he would be sure to do is find that phone. That even if it did fall in between his, you know, his seat and his console, and even if he couldn't reach it when he was driving, after the wreck, I mean, that would be the first thing you would do, right? Because you need help. You want to call somebody. You need your phone. But it seems as though he made no effort to retrieve it. He disappears, but his phone remains. And that's weird. I mean, that is definitely what you'd call a clue. That's a strange thing that happened here. And I think whatever happened, I think the phone is really a key to figuring that out.
Absolutely. And that's not the only thing that Jason left behind. Jason also had other belongings about 900 feet away from the car, so really not that far. Troopers found Jason's backpack, his baseball cap, some assorted toiletries, and a container with his dead betta fish in it. Inside the backpack was a laptop, some gaming equipment, and a small amount of marijuana. Now, NBC News reported that early rumors said his backpack was actually full of narcotics And that was just incorrect. I think they heard about a little bit of marijuana and probably ran with a more sensational story that this was some kid with a bunch of narcotics and that's why he ran, because he had a bunch of illegal drugs. Note what he has here. He has probably his most prized possessions in life for any of us. Our phone, our pet, and our laptop. Those are all left behind. And the beta fish in the cup, actually, I think it was like a thermos or a cup, you know, something not the tank. I did this all the time in college when I would actually have fish, is you kind of just scoop it up into a cup to go if you're not going to travel very far, and then put the fish into its container when it gets to home. But here, the fish was in its container, and by that point, I think it had been spilled, and so there was no water for the fish to live in. But why leave behind really your most prized possessions?
And, you know, I also can relate to this, because when I would go home, I would take my Xbox with me. So I had my Xbox in school, and then if I went home, I'd throw it in my backpack and take it with me so I could play it at home. And I think Jason had his PS4 in his backpack, so a nice piece of equipment, and it's just there in the backpack. Now, here's the interesting thing. It's not that far away, but it's still 900 feet away. So it seems like Jason or somebody took this backpack and the fish with them whenever they started, at least, to walk away from the car. But they didn't take the phone. The phone is in the car, but the beta fish is in the street. And that's a weird thing to me. Why do you take your beta fish and your, you know, your PlayStation, but you don't grab your phone? Even if you're only going to take it 900 feet, you leave your phone in the car. And that's, I don't know, that's a weird one.
And note that these are things are left behind. So if you think that Jason was the victim of some sort of robbery or carjacking, it's strange to have expensive items left behind, right? The laptop and the phone could be sold on, you know, Facebook Marketplace for some amount of money. So it is strange that these valuable items are left behind, even though Jason's no longer there.
Alice, before we continue, everyone knows how much I love Shudder, and we are so excited that they are sponsoring our podcast. Summer's over, fall is in the air, we've just survived the Halloween season, but that doesn't mean that it's not spooky season all year round. And with Shudder, it always is. They have a new season of Creepshow, they have VHS 94, and if you're like me and you love Joe Bob Briggs, The Last Drive-In is the place to go to not only see the best movies, but to get Joe Bob's expert commentary on them.
Absolutely. And you can stream great thrillers, horror, and suspense for $5.99 a month or just $56.99 a year, because Shudder has the largest, fastest-growing, curated selection of thrilling and dangerous entertainment. It's the Netflix for horror. There are new supernatural terrors, edge-of-your-seat thrillers, and shocking horrors added every week. And you can stream them on all your favorite devices, including iPhones, iPads, Xbox, Amazon Fire, Google Chromecast. You name it, it is there. And it is just unparalleled. Shudder has a unique collection of exclusive and original films and series, horror classics, and blockbuster hits.
So guys, join me on Shudder and get started streaming the best horror, thriller, and supernatural content. Shudder's expertly curated collection includes must-see titles like Vicious Fun, The Mortuary Collection, and PG Psycho Gorman, plus all the best horror documentaries and the hit Creepshow TV series from executive producer Greg Nicotero of The Walking Dead. Try Shudder free for 30 days. Go to Shudder.com and use promo code TP. That's SHUDDER.com and use promo code TP.
We've talked a little bit about it, but let's talk about that amount of marijuana. Is that why he ran? My understanding is this is a, like, his use marijuana. This is not a level that was meant for dealing. It wasn't, I think it was enough for maybe a couple joints, but it was not a packaged amount where he was either just buying a bulk amount or about to sell it. I don't think it was that amount. And we asked Jason's dad if he found that surprising, and he didn't really. In fact, this is when Jason's dad kind of unprompted noted that it had been a hard semester, really a hard year for Jason because of the COVID restrictions, the quarantines that he'd undergone on more than one occasion at school, how a lot of his classes were on Zoom, and that he wasn't surprised. I don't think he necessarily knew about the marijuana, but it wasn't a huge surprise that maybe Jason just needed an outlet because it was a tough year for him at school.
Yeah, that was the impression that I got as well, that this was just sort of his way of coping with it and wasn't a big deal, wasn't a lot of marijuana. We're talking like a couple of marijuana cigarettes, like in a pill bottle or something, like no big deal. Not, certainly not, you know, a backpack full of cocaine or anything like that. And, like Alan said, I don't think his father knew that he was smoking marijuana, but a lot of college kids are smoking marijuana. And as Alice said, and I think this has been borne out by conversations with his classmates, the quarantine was really hard on him. It was a difficult time, and he was coping with it. I think a lot of us experienced that. You know, there were all sorts of restrictions because of COVID, and those might have saved some lives, but they also did some damage to people's mental health. And I think that in this case, you see him, this is just part of his coping mechanism, but it's not necessarily this big clue that he's this big drug runner, and that's why he's out in the middle of nowhere in Texas.
Right. And if you think that Jason ran because he had drugs in his backpack, it's strange that he wouldn't have taken the drugs with him, right? It's there to be found. I mean, it is an open, it's on the road. It's not even hidden in the car. Oftentimes we will find people who try to hide their drugs if they're stopped at a traffic stop, you know, hiding it in the console or underneath their seat or some other way of tucking it away. But here, if in fact the drugs is what's making him afraid to be in contact with law enforcement, he's certainly not hiding it. Maybe he tried to take it and then dropped it for whatever reason, but it is right in the middle of the road. Now, Jason's father gets the call, and like many fathers, he's worried about his son. And so he drives in the middle of the night from Missouri City to Luling, Texas, to search the crash site himself. You know, Jason's dad said that he expected to be driving into a crime scene, you know, with yellow tape and flashing lights with lots of cop cars and ambulances all there to examine the crash scene because Jason's father, as we mentioned earlier, was an attorney. He knows how investigations should work. And he said the strangest thing is when he drove up, it was just pitch black. There was no one there at the site. He could barely even find the site. He actually had to go to where the car was towed and the wrecker company gave him the you know, crossroads of where the crash was. And in other words, there was no one there searching except for Jason's dad. And he was walking around, I think it was still dark out, looking for any trace of Jason or any clue to where he could be. And he did find some additional items, including Jason's shirt, shorts, underwear, and a wristwatch. Now, you may be thinking, what's the big deal? Maybe he had packed for his trip home and these clothes had just fallen out. But a photo taken of Jason that day shows that he's wearing the shirt found on the side of the road. So it's likely and very probable that those clothes were actually what Jason was wearing when he was driving the car, which would mean that Jason undressed and was naked when he walked away from his crashed car. Now, it's interesting that there was a slight amount of blood on Jason's shorts and underwear. But remember, there wasn't blood in the car. So maybe there's actually an easy theory to explain why there's a small amount of blood on his shorts and underwear. And that's that the car had kind of rear-ended and ended up backed up against a barbed wire fence. And when Jason was trying to force his driver's side door open, he may have been scratched or slightly cut by that barbed wire. I think we've all been in those situations where you're trying to push, you know, kind of a stuck door open and you do whatever you can, especially if it's in the middle of the night, it's dark, you may not see that there's barbed wire.
Yeah, and I think that's probably right. And when we say a slight amount of blood, we are talking very little blood here. So this is not indicative of any kind of major wound, just a few drops of blood on both the shorts and the underwear, which a couple things, I think it probably was a barbed wire. And the other thing is it's probably what he was wearing that day. So we have a picture of him in the shirt And now we have underwear and shorts both having blood on them, probably because he was wearing them. And so now we have you don't take the phone, but you take the fish, and you don't have any clothes on at this point. So, you know, these are very strange things that are adding up to something, but it's still not entirely clear what.
And it's interesting to note, too, that some people may take off their clothes if they think they're really hurt, right? Like, I can see someone in a panic, like, oh, my goodness, like, my ribs are broken, my internal organs are, you know, bleeding, I have to see what's going on, and, like, tear off their clothes. But there's no indication that there was that type of trauma on the clothes except for that tiny amount of blood.
Right, exactly. And you might be asking yourself, why it was the father who found these things? Why was it that he showed up and there was no one there? And this is, we talked about Maura Murray, this is another sort of strange parallel between the two cases. Essentially, this was found by a Texas state police officer who'd arrived on the scene, and he claimed that he smelled alcohol. And so on the basis of that, he essentially decided he had a DUI walkaway on his hands. So whoever this was, it was a DUI. That's why they got in this wreck. They were probably hiding from him, and, you know, they would turn up later. So he conducts the barest of searches. He finds that backpack, and that's about it. And then he leaves the scene. So by the time Jason's dad shows up, he's gone. He's in bed asleep somewhere. And that means it's just in these critical moments, these critical hours after Jason's death. Remember, they don't get the call. His dad doesn't get the call until 2 o'clock. So it's already been an hour and a half since the car wreck. By the time he gets there, you know, it's going to take him a couple hours to get there. Like Alice said, the car's already been towed, so he has to go meet the wrecker company. Hours and hours and hours have passed. It's still early morning, but these are critical moments in a missing persons case. And there's no one there to help. There's no one there to help him search. And it's just him by himself. And you have to wonder if there had been a little bit more effort from the police officers who were involved in this, maybe this wouldn't be a mystery. Maybe we would have found Jason and found him safe. But that's not what happened. And initially, this fell entirely on Jason's father to try and find his son. Although the initial search was obviously lacking, it wasn't long before a professional search occurred, and professional searchers were on the scene. You're probably wondering, were there dogs? There were. They were brought in, and they actually kept hitting on small bodies of water around the area. And again and again and again, the people who were in charge of this search thought maybe Jason stumbled into one of these bodies of water and drowned. And so they would drain lake after lake, lake strong, pond after pond, to try and find Jason's body, but they found nothing. Well, it turns out this area is made up largely of cattle ranches and petrochemical plants, and Jason's dad, his understanding is that some of these chemicals that are used in the oil business mimic the scents given off by a decaying body, and so the dogs are easily confused by this and are essentially useless. They get nose tired very quickly. So even if they can follow a scent for a little while, it doesn't take long for their sort of faculties to be overwhelmed.
And I can completely see this. You know, growing up in close to this area in Texas, there really are just large ranches and kind of these oil wells everywhere. So if they do give off a scent that mimics a decaying body, I can't even imagine that a dog would scent dogs would be of much help. But my understanding is they also brought in, like you said, they get nose weary. They brought in different groups of dogs at different times, and they haven't been successful in finding Jason.
Alice, before we continue, I want to talk about one of our favorite sponsors, HelloFresh. Alice, hard as it is to believe, it's the holiday season. And everybody knows the holidays can be hectic, but HelloFresh helps keep things simple with recipes and ingredients that cut out grocery shopping and limit meal prep time so you can spend more of the festive season with friends and family.
Brett, I absolutely love HelloFresh, and so does my family. Today was a crazy day at the office, and I got home and had to get dinner on the table for really hungry boys, and I reached for our favorite, the Winner Winner Chicken Orzo Dinner. I mean, that's just a great name. And my toddler was yelling, Orzo, 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 and immediately gulped it all down. I barely got any because they were so excited to eat it. It makes cooking for my family easy, but also I know that it isn't just for meals. Their marketplace features a variety of add-ons for breakfast, desserts, and seasonal snacks like Pillsbury pumpkin cookie dough. Mm.
Yeah, and everybody who knows me knows that cookie dough is right down my alley. Well, guys, HelloFresh is a can't-beat value, even at full price. It's over 30% cheaper than grocery stores. And with this holiday deal that our listeners are going to get, it's time for you to try it for even less. So go to HelloFresh.com/TP14 and use code TP14 for up to 14 free meals and 3 free gifts. Once again, that's HelloFresh.com/TP14. Use code TP14 and you will get 14 free meals and 3 free gifts.
And Brett, remember, Green Chef is now owned by HelloFresh, and with a wider array of meal plans to choose from, there's something for everyone. I know that I love switching between the brands, and now all of you can enjoy both brands at a discount on us. So join us and find out why HelloFresh is America's number one meal kit. Now, this is a huge question. Where was Jason going? When Jason entered Luling, he would have come to the intersection of Spruce Avenue and East Austin Street. At that point, a right would have taken him to I-10, where he should be going if he were going home. And if he went straight, it would take him to Salt Flat Road. Jason's dad was able to give a little bit more context to this road. Basically, he said, if you didn't know where you were going and you stayed the course, it would take you to Salt Flat Road. So, in other words, taking the right is an active decision you have to make, and that's the correct turn to get onto the ramp. But it's easy, it could be easy to miss if you don't know this area well, especially if you don't have your maps on. And if he thought he was about to get on the ramp and just stayed the course, it would then start bending and turn to Salt Flat Road. Now, for reasons we don't know, Jason does go straight. Salt Flat Road is a dusty, barely paved road that leads off into seemingly nowhere. The road has a few houses along the way, but is mostly empty. If you go a few miles down it and take a left, there's a skydiving facility. That's just how empty it is. Now, Jason had only driven this trip, like we said, twice before, and both of those times Jason's dad told us were during the daytime. So with his ways off, Jason's dad at least thinks it's very possible that Jason just took a wrong turn or really didn't fail to take the right turn and ended up where he was. Now, I've been on these kind of barely paved roads in Texas where you think surely the next road will take me to the ramp. Surely, if you guys have driven in non-rural places, you know almost all roads connect to another big road. But not so when you're in the middle of nowhere, Texas. You could go miles and miles and miles and not have a turnaround point or another exit kind of ramp to then be able to connect to the big road. And that is the case here with Salt Flat Road. If you keep going down this, it takes you farther and farther away from your destination. And if it's in the middle of the night, it's dark, there aren't houses around, it can become very confusing very quickly.
And I think people will naturally wonder, why do you just keep going? Why don't you turn around? And I think Alice has put her finger on it. It's just stubbornness, right? It's just pure stubbornness. You're driving down the road and you just think, eventually I'm going to come to something, even if it's not I-10. It'll be faster if I just keep going. I don't want to backtrack. It's already late. Remember, he left so late. It's already very late. He doesn't want to waste any more time. He doesn't want to have to turn around. He's dropped his phone probably by this point. So, or he's got it, but Waze is off. And so he's trying to put Waze on. And maybe that's what leads to the crash. And, you know, aside time, Brett, storytelling time. So when I was in high school, this is before, you know, we had these fancy phones. There was this place that everybody talked about that was supposed to, you could like look out over the town, right? It was in the mountains. Mountains are strong. It was in the hills and you could look out over town. It was supposed to be really pretty. And so, it was one of those places you take a girl on a date and it's supposed to be romantic or whatnot. So somebody told me how to get there and they wrote down on a sheet of paper, like directions on how to get there. And you're supposed to go out of town, into this other little town, and up this road, past this restaurant, and then you took the first left past that restaurant. The restaurant's name was the Frontier Restaurant, and it was appropriately named because by the time you got to it, you just felt like you were in the middle of nowhere. And I'll never forget, I kept driving up this road past the Frontier Restaurant. It's dark. It's night. It's nighttime because I'm an idiot and left at night. And I come to this road that I'm supposed to turn left on, and I stop in the middle of the road I'm currently on because there's no one else on this road. And where I'm from is the kind of place where there are a lot of sort of abandoned roads leading off into the hills where people probably get murdered all the time, or if they're not getting murdered, their bodies are being disposed of or whatnot. And so I'm sitting there staring down this road, and it's a gravel road. And I'm like, do I really want to do this? But I'd come that far. So I decided to turn down the road. So I turned down this gravel road and I start driving. And the road just gets narrower and narrower and narrower. And there's nothing. And it's so dark. And I do the thing where I turn off my radio, because when you're focusing on driving, it's like I can't listen to the radio anymore. So I turn off the radio. And I just felt like I drove down this road for an eternity. But I kept thinking, if I try and turn around, I'll get stuck. That was my concern, is if I try and turn around, I'm going to go into one of the ditches on one of the sides, and I'll get stuck. So I just kept going down this road, and it's dusty. I can't see anything because there's all this dust, and it's dark, and all I have is my lights. Well, after what seemed like forever, I finally come out to a road, a regular road, and I was so happy. I was like praising Jesus. And so I turned down this road, and the very first gas station I come to, I stop because I have no idea where I am and I need to get back home. And I go into the gas station and I ask the guy how to get back to my hometown, which is the biggest town in my county. And I kid you not, the guy's like, I've never heard of that. I don't know where that is. So I'm like, where in the world am I? And I had just driven forever. I was just in the middle of nowhere. It took me forever to get back where I was going, but I was just lucky that I eventually came out to a road. I very easily could have just never come to a road. I could still be driving on that road today. And I just feel like that's what Jason was doing. I think he turned down that road and he just thought, this is going to come out eventually. He knew he had taken a wrong turn somewhere. I don't think he thought I-20 was going to, or I-10 was going to pop up anytime soon, but I think he just thought, this is going to come to a main road, and it just never did.
You gave me a lot of anxiety listening to that story, because I was like, oh, I can see it, right? And I think a lot of us have had that experience, and your story never became a story because you are here today, and this only became a thing because Jason is missing. In other words, while it may seem strange to us, hindsight 2020, I don't think it necessarily was so strange for him at the time.
Yeah, I think that's right.
Which is why this case is so mind-boggling. This could be any of us.
Well, I think we are going to go ahead and cut it off there for this week. But there is still so much to discuss with you guys, both about how this happened, some more of the weird things about this case, and some theories. Is this a case where foul play is involved? Is this a case that's just a tragic accident? There's a lot of evidence pointing both ways, and we're going to walk through all of it. I do want to say, this is a case that can be solved, and it's a case where somebody out there might have information. So we've talked about Jason a lot. Just want to say he is described as being 6'1". He weighs 170 pounds. He has brown hair, brown eyes, and facial hair. We're going to put a poster, the missing poster for Jason. There is a $10,000 reward up on our website. If you're watching on YouTube, you're probably seeing it right now. If you have information about what might have happened to Jason, please call the Caldwell County Sheriff's Office at 512-398-6777. This case is less than a year old. If you're listening to us in Texas, I hope you've paid attention to these basic facts. And if you do know anything, I hope you'll reach out to somebody. And you can reach out to us. We are always happy to talk to you. It's always surprising the people who feel more comfortable telling us things than the police. But if you're one of those people, let us know. We will do everything we can to protect your anonymity, but get the information to the people who need it. This is a case. This is a case that can be solved, and we hope that you can help us solve it. If you have thoughts, questions, comments, or information, feel free to shoot us an email, prosecutorspod@gmail.com, @prosecutorspod for all your various social media. Check us out on the gallery. Come hang out with us on the gallery. We're always having a great time on there discussing this case and anything else you want to talk about. You can also join us on Patreon if you're sick of ads or if you just want to do get vocals with us. Keep on telling your friends. We keep getting emails from people who are listening to the show for the first time, and it is awesome. So thank you all for that, because that is all you guys. And leave those 5-star reviews on Apple. Wallace, we're going to do this again next week, but do you have any thoughts on this case before we sign off?
No, that's it, except that this is such a sad case. And, you know, thank you all for listening. Thank you for bringing it to our attention. And we can't wait to dive into more information next time.
And there is so much more to talk about, as you guys are going to see. Well, that is all we have for today, but we'll be back next week with a continuation of this case. But until then, I'm Brett.
And I'm Alice.
And we are the Prosecutors. Do you have the thing? The thing is the thing up.
The what?
The thing.
What? Wait. What?
The outline.
Oh, yes. Yes. The thing is up. What? I was like, what's the thing? Oh, he's talking about thing. What?
Oh, my goodness.
That was very good. Yeah, my thing is up. My thing is up.
Two. We'll be right back.
Spectrum One is a big deal. You get Spectrum Internet with the most reliable internet speeds, free advanced Wi-Fi for enhanced security and privacy, and a free Spectrum Mobile Unlimited line with nationwide 5G included, all while saving big. For the big speed, big reliability, and big savings you want, get Spectrum One. Just $49.99 a month for 12 months. Visit spectrum.com/bigdeal for full details. Offer subject to change. Valid for qualified residential customers only. Service not available in all areas. Restrictions apply.